This is iFanboy Pick of the Week, episode 924, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you. My name is Connor Kilpatrick. This is my co-host, Josh Flanagan.
What's up, kids?
And this is iFanboy Pick of the Week, episode 924. And Josh, I am so excited to do the show this week.
Mm-hmm.
I'm excited to talk to you, as always. I really enjoyed my books this week. I was looking forward to record time, is what I'm saying.
Well, that just put a lot of pressure on me.
I hope you did, too.
I mean, I'm hoping it goes well. I'll tell you what's actually going on right now. Like, my body and mind are reconfiguring themselves to do this, and I'm not quite there. We're going to be just fine.
Yeah.
But I haven't quite locked in yet. My
neighbor gave
me
a bunch of powder. I don't know what the powder was.
Right. You're like, don't worry, I'll talk. I'll take over.
I'm really excited.
Yeah. It was talcum. You know what? I've been that excited about Gold Bond, especially like extra strength Gold Bond. You know, like in a humid city with a lot of walking.
Oh yeah.
You know what I'm talking about?
I haven't had the need to put it on in a while, but sometimes I just think about putting it on just for fun.
Every once in a while, my kids will be like, "This hurts a little bit," and I was like, "Oh, boys, come here.
Let me tell you about the magic of Gold Bond."
And then they give you that look, like, "Oh."
Brought to you by Gold Bond. Didn't we try to get them as a sponsor? Yeah, we did.
Yeah, we definitely did.
What good stuff.
I feel 100%, they've helped me so often, I feel 100% okay with giving them free promotion.
We got a lot to talk about, so let's move on. Every week one of us reads all their books, and we talk about the one I like the best. That's called the Pick of the Week. Talk about that book, the other books in the week, the patron pick, the listener mail. It's going to be fun. And here's your spoiler warning. This is a review show. Exercise some caution. Josh, you had the pick of the week.
So this Avengers Twilight, book five, I didn't realize until you'd point out that it's getting the black label treatment. It's a book five, because that means that's like prestige.
That's the prestige thing now.
I don't buy physical issues anymore, so I don't know if there's a square bound. That used to be, and now it has to say book whatever, and you're like, oh, this is literature.
And this is also literature. The third of five picks for this series.
Is it really? I thought I knew it had been at least one, and then I felt like
check
I think there's
sure,
been another.
I'm pretty sure it's third.
I was pretty deep into what was a quite big week. I think I had 19, 20 books, something like that. And I had no front runner. I had enjoyed books that I'd read, but there was nothing where I was like, that's the thing. And as I'm reading Avengers Twilight.
Sorry, we're on alternate issues. So 1, 3, and 5 have all been picked.
Well, the odd issues, that makes sense. Because the evens one have got to set stuff up.
You, me, you. Okay. Yeah. You, me, you. Okay. Made these the pick. Okay.
Is the sixth the last issue or?
I think so. I believe. Oh, I don't know.
Otherwise,
yes,
you
it is
to do
5 of 6. This is 5 of 6. It says it on the app here.
Well, we'll see how it ends. I'm reading this book and largely marveling at the art. There was a lot of times where I just thought, oh my God, because I remember it was not too many months ago, just before this came out, where I was like, who was that guy who was amazing? And it took a minute to think of his name. Surprise, surprise. Like, what's he been doing? And then sort of it shows up.
This book.
Yeah. And it took me almost a little while to acclimate, to be like, oh yeah, this guy is good. But I think hitting, I'm not going to say he hit his stride in this because it's been really good. But basically, as I was reading this, I just went, I was like, oh, this is comic books. This is the Avengers. This is like an Avengers movie. That's what this book feels like. This could be like a two movie. Like, this is epic enough, but also believable enough. You know, but it has a lot of things in it that really get to the core of these Marvel characters. You have, normally Steve Rogers is a man out of time, but in this he's actually older and he's falling away from it, and he has another life that's pulling him into it. and everything has changed about the world. And we're, again, we are thrown in. There's no explanation. We are in a different world right from the beginning. We figure it out as we're going along. Things have changed considerably. We had revealed that, and I read this and I didn't look it up backwards, but I believe Jarvis, whose first name was Kyle, is that correct? Kyle Jarvis?
Book, well, not it's not the Jarvis we know and love. That was Edwin.
No,
Jarvis.
It's his brother. But you're telling
Listen,
me that
sometimes Edwin's- you've got an Edwin. And you got a Kyle.
What?
Kyle
what?
Was born like, in the 90s.
It's like three generations apart. because at the beginning, James Stark is saying to new Red Skull, who he's saying, no, call me Johan now. He's like, but Kyle. And I was like, wait, that was Jarvis. His name's Kyle Jarvis? That is the worst choice in the entire book. Okay. So just so I got that. Okay.
No, it was silly. It's got to be canon. There's no, it wouldn't make any sense.
Or I mean, like the other thing I thought of, and I like somebody just thought it was really funny. Name Kyle. That doesn't make sense. Yeah, let's do it. Like that's the only other thing I could think of. Anyway, you know, that character is all these characters related to other characters we kind of know. And then through this cool sort of story, it turns out that Jarvis is actually the soul of the Red Skull. And you get a redesigned Ultron Iron Man robot Red Skull whose body is actually being absorbed by the suit, and he's like, hey, you're leaking, and there's blood coming out the bottom, and then later you see it's just all of this stuff, and it's the Red Skull. Like, and when he comes on, you're not like, oh, this is just a different version of him. Like, there's been in the comics, like the Red Skull was a different character for a while. Like, this is Johann Schmidt. And so, you know, and then there's the like Ultron shows up and you're like, this is really bad. And I like it. And he's got Tony Stark's son on his side. And then finally, the other thing that got me here is that there is a little bit of a ripped from the headlines situation going on here where they're talking about like the world doesn't believe in heroes anymore. Mm-hmm. And they talk about the fact that once people believe something, it's hard to convince them otherwise. Now, that is straight out of the world that we are all living in right now. Every, correct. you know, armchair literate person thinks that, you know, they want to talk about this. And just for a second, I was like, I don't know. And I thought, you know what, this actually, I think it's done really well. If we're talking about an American condition and how things, you know, if you start going, well, wait, so was the metaphor here that the Red Skull is, it doesn't matter. I actually thought it was done really well in a way that is suitable for a Marvel comic book of this kind of story. Mm-hmm. And it will work if you read it in 20 years, or it'll work if you read it, you know, 40 years, 30 years ago.
It has to work that way. Otherwise, it's dated.
Yes, because it's not so specific. Even though the president here looks a lot like Trump, at least in like silhouette. And as we're really brought to a head. Also, there's the thing where the skull takes his. It's an amazing. He's slowly his helmet comes undone when he's looking at the president, who looks like Trump and Robert Redford mixed together. And there's a great little sequence of it, like opening.
I was going to say that's Trump sees in the mirror, but
that's the hair that he is going for. And then you see like he's got the Darth Vader, you know, mask off kind of thing. But he has like tubes going into his eyes, and you realize that like all of the biological is being replaced.
Right.
Which is
Ultron
terrifying.
Is assimilating the body.
Yeah. You know, and like the fight is really big. There's one more reveal at the end, and it's not like some character you don't know.
Here's the deal. This book is terrific. So everything I'm about to say is not a criticism, because I love this book.
It is terrific.
However, it is Kingdom Come. We made that joke in the beginning.
Hmm.
It's definitely Kingdom Come. If you had any question about here Luke Cage shows up in a Batman Kingdom Come exoskeleton to fight. And then the whole sequence where Iron Man goes to stop a nuclear bomb being dropped before kill everybody, which is just straight out of Kingdom Come. And it turns out it's a mind-altered Hulk, which is just like the mind-altered Captain Marvel. It's almost the same kind of final page.
James Stark is Magog.
It's Kingdom Come. And I'm no problem with that, because comics are constantly referring to themselves. And, you know, it's rare you get a cross-aisle reference like this. But it definitely has Kingdom Come in its DNA of the whole, you know, generational divide, old heroes returning to set things right. You know, it's all there. But Chip Zdarsky, Daniel Cunha, and let's not discount Joe Caramagna.
Never.
Are doing a terrific
job. He's doing the heavy lifting.
Telling a really compelling story in a way we haven't had in an Avengers book in I don't know how long. You know, the Avengers book itself you know, we had years of Jason Aaron telling, you know, okay to sort of inconsequential stories. Jed McKay's telling okay to inconsequential stories. And we've got occasional miniseries here and there. Usually the retro ones have been terrific. But for the most part, I haven't felt this way reading an Avengers book in a long time. Maybe a decade.
Yeah.
It's really
also
fun.
Let's point out the Alex Ross cover. And I don't talk about covers enough, but I opened it and I was like, that's a great cover.
It's a good design. I wonder if he's doing the character designs. He usually likes to do those things, but it's probably him or Andrew Acuna. But we said this last time we talked about it, but it does feel like, oh man, I wish there were 12. I wish we really got to dig into this world and really learn about it. But it's also really fast paced and exciting. And as a six, it's turned out the pacing is actually working.
And there hasn't been an issue. You know, and there is. When there's 8, when there's 10, when there's 12, there's usually a 1 or 2 in the middle where you're like, all right, let's get through it. Like, this is boom, 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 boom. I want to know what happens next. You know, wall-to-wall action. There's not a page in here that there isn't something just fantastic on. Not a page.
Right.
You can look at every page and you can find something great. I was also thinking about Acuna. He's a guy's clearly doing digital, right?
Yes, probably.
But... it's good. And that is not to say that digital isn't good or bad. As a lot of times there are people who are trying to replicate, and some are successful at it, but they're trying to replicate what was done on paper on digital. And you can kind of see it. Whereas this, I think Greg Smallwood's another guy who does this too. They're owning the digital. They're not trying to hide it. They're not trying to imitate analog, and not everybody can do it. Other people have owned it, and it's lifeless. But you know, this is, you know, again, Acuna and Greg Smallwood are probably some of the best sort of full on digital. Did Smallwood do the colors in?
Yeah, he did everything.
Yeah, same kind of deal. Like, they're controlling the process, and it's funny because Acuna's like the opposite kind of artist of Smallwood. Right. Like, this is this is all like Neil Adams, wall-to-wall action, and I feel like Smallwood can do it, but he also just did a bunch of like beautiful design and kind of moody stuff. It's sort of calm and brooding.
I can definitely see that, and I also see that there's also a sense of realism in Acuna's work. That it is exaggerated realism, but I totally understand what you're saying.
Yeah, I can see Kirby, and I can see Buscema, and I can see Neil Adams in this. Again, not in an IMAX, but like, it's that energy. There's a bit like the fight, the drama between Tony Stark and his son and all the stuff that goes on. I was like, this is really well written, and it sort of understands the characters. And you know, but it's also like amped up, you know, like his son's going nuts. There's a shot on page 29, you know, and you see James's face, the mask is open. He's, you know, he's raving.
Yeah, he's crazy.
Yeah, he is. And the whole time you're like, I want this to be okay. And they have
You wonder if he's going to get the Ben Skywalker treatment. Not Skywalker, Ben Solo treatment. Is he going to get redeemed? But he's pretty far around the bend at this point.
Yeah.
You know. He's the Magog, right? So, is he the Magog?
I think he is, yeah.
Yeah, he's the Magog.
And Magog has a turn, right? Like, that's...
Yeah, he totally does, yeah.
And then of course, the end, Hulk shows up and like, that's Shazam.
Right.
That's crazy.
And that's how you raise the stakes, right? It's the last stake raising is to add the Hulk to the mix. There's a terrific sequence where Ms. Marvel and the new Hawkeye have like their own version of fastball special. Like, it's a really fun team they've got here. They're sort of recreating a very classic team because it's Cap and it's Tony and it's Thor. But then they add, and there's a new Hawkeye, and then you add Ms. Marvel. And then there's Luke Cage is kind of there, but he's sort of in the background. It's a fun group.
Yeah.
Chip's doing a terrific job with the tone of this book, which is, you know, important and serious, but not weighty in terms of, it's not overly so.
Yeah.
And I really like it. It's just incredibly fun.
It is.
I'm looking forward to issue 6.
It's like good old superhero comics for now.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's got everything that's good about the past, but it's clearly a modern comic book.
Yes,
it's a wonderful sort of amalgamation of all the things that are good about it, and it's like really, it's very much doing justice to the name Avengers on the front in a way that many comics have not in a long time. And we're on the 5th issue; everyone has been fun and exciting, You know, this was in like it's in a ramping up way. Like at first you're like, this is really cool. I don't know what it is yet. And then it pays off. That's something. You know, so many people can get away with the idea and sort of the introduction being like, that's awesome. And then having it sort of follow through. I mean, we don't know what the ending is like yet, but I've got a lot of trust in it. So I guess it could let me down, but I'm thinking it's not gonna.
So let's discuss the X-Men. The Fall of the House of X.
Fall of the House of X. All right. First of all, I would like to hope that the X-Men fans of this show, X-Men readers who have been listening to this show, who have probably been like feeling they got the short end of the stick for a while. I hope that they got some solace over the last, you know, 6 months or so, as we've been really into this X-Men event, both of us.
We've talked about X-Men more in the last couple of years than you and I had
ever.
Maybe the whole rest of the time.
And I think that Jerry Duggan has done a wonderful job of sort of like, I assume that X-Men people are getting a lot out of this, and I've been able to too. So I think that that's really nice.
Well, just, who knows? X-Men fans are
right, are
very particular.
I don't even know. However,
it's not a criticism. We used to host the show with one of them.
However, I do think a little bit that this is where the stories, and I get you want to do this when you do comic books. It's turning into the end of the world. It feels like it's too much. I feel like the story got too big.
We didn't care about it was the space stuff. We didn't really care about the space stuff, which is fine.
Was Krakoa always Groot? Is he not a Groot?
Yeah, Krakoa is a living. It was a living island. It's personified.
Right. Now he's a tree.
Well, because they had like shrunk him down,
right,
or something.
Maybe don't make him look like Groot.
Yeah, the art wasn't the best in this issue.
No, the coloring was very good.
I'm continually amused. Like if you go to page 16, where all these artists they get, no one can look up a baseball field reference. It's like just look it up on the internet. It's just the base that's between Cyclops' legs is next to the mound. Like, I don't know what happened here. But whoever drew this page, it was two artists, Lucas Warnock and Jethro Morales on this book. Someone needed access to the internet to see what a baseball field looks like. It doesn't matter. The art wasn't the best. I'm hanging on by my fingernails for this finale because I didn't want to just drop out right before the finale of this whole story that I've been reading this entire time. And I've been enjoying the Jerry Duggan parts. And the ending with Storm was appropriately like exciting. Mm-hmm. But I am looking forward to the next phase. And I know as a comic, I hate that about, you know, comic fandom is that where you're constantly looking ahead and not enjoying what's in front of you. I really like this Krakoa era. The ending isn't my favorite because it deals with the part of the story I didn't care about the most. So I'm just sort of reading it. Because I'm enjoying it, but I'm just curious what's happening. Gonna happen next.
But it undercuts the whole idea that it was this like humans against mutants thing, I think. And it was about
they
Earth,
had them aliens in.
I know, but Earth and humans and mutants. And like that to me is the story. That's the interesting thing. And so if you say at the end, well, it was never about that.
It was about the AI the whole time. That's what it is. And it's an AI panic story.
I don't like that.
Well, how do you get the humans and the mutants back together is you had the robots in.
I guess, but the bad guys in this weren't human. The humans in this that were bad guys weren't redeemable characters.
Yeah, most of them are dead, though.
Yeah, that's true. They really have killed the shit out of them. You got to give them that. The pages Apocalypse are much better than the pages with the other characters.
Yes, those are good pages. I don't know who did those.
Yeah.
I feel like Lucas Warnock is a name I've seen before. So, off the show, just in our own personal lives, you and I have discussed John Constantine, Hellblazer, Dead in America.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't talked about the show too much. I think we talked about one of the issues. But the last time an issue came out, you and I both talked about it just on our own, saying, what is happening? Because we loved Cy Spurrier's run on the book. And then we loved that miniseries he did, which was like really good. And we got like three picks of the week out of
it. Yeah. Which was about England.
This one is not good. However,
go ahead.
This issue was good.
Yes, that is kind of where I'm at. And I think for me, the big thing here is that I'm going to tread some ground lightly is what I'm about to do. I feel like throughout this Hellblazer in America thing, I have become slightly defensive about a British perspective on America because I think it's a little heavy. Not, it's just like it's a little basic.
It's a little surfacey.
It's a little on the nose.
In its criticism. It almost feels like, do you remember when we used to work for a British company? We'd go over to the office in England and they would criticize America. And
yeah.
It's like, yeah, like, yeah, you know, all the stuff you're saying is not wrong, but it's also very not nuanced.
Well, I also, and they would be like, well, it's like this. And I was like, that's half of us. Like, yes, half of us are like that, but half of us aren't. And it's interesting because I was also thinking about the fact that, like, everybody can do this about Americans. British people, certainly, they do stories about America. British people write Americans all the time. Americans, I can't think of a lot of instances where we write about the British condition all that often. Or like British politics or like culture. It's like we can't figure it out, but they can do it the other way. It's very strange. But I was a little like, that, you know, but again, that said, the themes in this, the sort of solution to this problem, the story that goes on in this issue, despite some of the ham-handed stereotypes of middle America, basically, you know, like it's so easy to, and that's what it is. It's like they're stereotypes that don't really follow through. Now, there are people like that, but it's a little sort of a cartoon version of people. And, but the story that takes place in this one and the way that there's a town that has a sickness and because of it, Swamp Thing stuck in a cornfield or something like that. And the sort of way that they bring it out and what it means. And even that was a little on the nose, but I thought the story was well done. And the way that it was revealed was well done. So structurally, I thought that was really nice. The other thing I think going on here is that I actually really like the interactions between the characters in this. While I'm not enjoying the sort of like, here's what's wrong with America, I think this little group of characters, Constantine and the Scottish girl and his mute son, is really interesting. The Swamp Thing and Constantine has always been good. And then you got that other lady in the bottle. And then finally Sandman, like all that stuff is actually pretty interesting.
If this was like a special that came out, like a one-shot Hellblazer book.
Yeah.
I'm like, wow, that was great.
Yeah.
I just couldn't tell you if this tied into the rest because it has so not stuck in my brain what the story of this book is.
He's retrieving the sand. That's all.
Right, that's the overall story. He's looking for Sandman Sand. But like, I don't remember if this town story was a thread line or this is a new thing. I just couldn't remember because...
No, it's new. They're going there. It's a road trip. Right.
I'm just saying I didn't remember because the through line of what's been happening in the book other than the Sandman stuff has not stayed with me because I don't find it that compelling. So that's this particular story where he and his son go to this town where this football team has done horrible things to women and they're not getting punished for it and they end up punishing them was really good. Mm-hmm. Really, really good.
And the method by which they're punished is pretty rough.
Right. In a good way. Good. And then the Sandman, the Swamp Thing stuff was good. Mm-hmm. Aaron Campbell has drawn all of these stories for Cy Spurrier. He's still terrific, but this was the first issue that really, I realized that this was a good issue.
One thing that was actually really nice too is I thought that I did it too. Swamp Thing is basically like, well, fuck humans. You're a disease.
Yeah.
And like, he kept going on and I was like, this is a fucking bummer. And they do the thing where like, well, there's good in them and you can be saved. And I mean, it's a little touchy feely, but I was like, okay, I needed that. Cause it was too much of a bummer, you know? And I don't want Swamp Thing to be like, fuck humans. Like that's not,
well, that was kind of also in the vein of the criticizing of America stuff.
It's sure.
Like, okay. Well, what else you got? Like, and you're right. Like, you want you want Swamp Thing. Why did that happen? You want Swamp Thing to be a bit more
human.
Especially in a world where there's all these magical abilities and you can do anything. That's the problem with dealing. And we've always said this is the problem of dealing with real world problems in these fantastical worlds is that in reality, any number of characters in this DC universe could fix climate change.
Right.
If this was real. And so the problem with dealing with it is like, well, why doesn't that guy fix it? Why doesn't Firestorm take all the stuff out of that? You know, it's just, that's why it's just better not to, because it's just, it's so, it's like, it's a problem bigger than the DC universe and yet smaller within it. So that's why I was like, okay, well, I mean, I'm pretty sure some of his buddies could deal together and fix pollution.
Yeah.
The football player in the bathroom looked about 35.
Yep. That'd be my criticism. I was actually just thinking that. I don't know. It feels... It's like knee-jerky liberal, like look at the rednecks. Just, by the way, did you see the Maria Lovett cover alternate cover.
Yes, it's really good.
Awesome. I was like, who's really that? Good. And I was like, oh, cool. It's the Crave lady.
Yeah, really good. I mean, look, this was a good issue.
Yep.
This was, I was kind of dreading reading it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I started to, and I was like, oh, okay, this is good. And by like three quarters of the way through, I was like, I'm really into this. And by, when I finished, I was like, oh, shit, that was good.
Yeah, it was. So, and the reveal of the solution or the comeuppance, I thought was, like, is there a second? I was like, did I miss it? And they really, like, made you wait for it. So it was the last thing in the book.
Wonder Woman number 8, Tom King, Danielson Pair. So now we're back to the story. Last issue was that sort of side story, which I assume was to keep Danielson Pair on time.
And thank
you. So we're back with the main story in which Wonder Woman is being held captive by the King of America. And this was a very disturbing issue.
I loved it.
And I thought that it was worth mentioning because of that. Like, anytime a comic can have causing me an actual, like, you know, physical feeling, because I'm dead inside, it's worth noting. Like, this whole issue, she's tied up with the lasso of lies, and he's trying to sort of, you know, make her submissive, and so she's stuck in this fantasy 50s fantasy, because it's not real, not because it's good. Mm-hmm. This fantasy 50s world where she's married to Steve Trevor and she's the perfect 50s housewife and he's an asshole. You make Don Draper look like a super dude.
Yeah. Steve Trevor too, he's, which is all the more.
Yeah. All while in the real world, the king is berating her and reading her scriptures about how women should be submissive. And I mean, look, if you go back to the world, to the start of Wonder Woman, the Golden Age, and you know anything about her creation, this was her being a submissive and being all being about being tied up was a heavy part of her character, because her creator was into
that,
into it. And so this is a sort of a play on that, about her, you know, that part of her creation is her as the submissive woman, you know. And there's a part where he pours a glass of wine on her head, and I was like, fuck, this is disturbing, but in a good way. Because when she breaks out at the end, it's very cathartic. And not to mention the sort of side sequence in the middle where the three Wonder Girls are
great.
Torturing Sergeant Steel for information.
Yeah.
Not really torturing, but, you know, psychologically torturing.
Like, yeah. I mean, I think that there was so much good in this. And I don't mean good, like so much quality comic booking in this that... And it's again, like with the Tom King, like his work right now is very varied. All the books he have out are completely different from one another. And this isn't following his, you know, tight grid rule. I don't know that I've noticed Daniel Semper. Like, I've been like, oh, that's great. But this issue specifically, I was like, this is gorgeous. And his ability to do that, you know, Americana 50s thing, that first page where you see her, first the cover's awesome. The storytelling of it, everything about it is great, you know. And then the first page, you see her in, you know, her kitchen in her 50s get up, and it's like, you know, your first thought is, this is like this romantic version of America. She's beautiful, she's in the kitchen, you know, she's happy. And then it quickly, you know, they put you back, and then you know, like, the reality is terrible, and you're like, oh, is this going to be like a Starro thing? You know, is she living her best life in this? Or, you know, and quickly you are disabused of that. You know, because he's awful right away. The husband, Steve Trevor.
Yeah, I think I liked the device a lot, where in the 50s fantasy world, she was speaking in that world, but thinking in the real world. That was a good device to show the tension of the situation. And it was a very disturbing comic, which was, again, in a really good way.
And I really like, I mean, just like The Help. Actually, the King of America guy looks a lot like The Help. Tom's working through something. There's like a page, what is it? Page 12. And he's sitting in his chair and he's holding his glass of wine. And just like, you look at him and it's such a non, it's a terrifying but non-assuming character. His old man shoes on. He is.
Well, let me say, as someone who grew up in Manhattan around a lot of really, really old money rich people, this is how they dress.
Oh, absolutely.
The penny loafers, the blue blazer, the white shirt. I mean, the ascot's probably the most sort of affectatious part of his outfit. That wouldn't be something that, you know, you don't see walking on Park Avenue. But this is basically how old rich money dresses.
Mm-hmm. Still, do you think?
Still, yeah, for sure.
The same people?
It's the same people, same families. And now, look, I mean, my only criticism of this book is not really a super criticism, is that there's just no way this is happening in the regular DC universe. And I don't care either way. It doesn't really bother me or affect my enjoyment of the book or not. But, you know, it just doesn't. Just this is no way. But
I really like the backup story in this one.
Oh, I didn't read it.
Oh, I thought it was really fun. It's basically Damian and Jonathan are watching the daughter of Wonder Woman. I don't really know where she comes from, what it's about. This is part five of a story that's been going on, but it works on its own as a story. She does some time traveling. John unlocks the Fortress of Solitude with a giant golden key, which I always appreciate. You know, it's silly. It's silly enough that I went back and be like, who wrote this? And it was like Tom had written this too. There's a great page where realities are changing around Jonathan and Damian. And you see them. If you read it, I don't even know how to explain it, but it's a beautiful page. It's a fun little backup. And they're usually not. So worth pointing out.
I've really been loving Batman Offworld. This is number four of Jason Aaron and Doug Monkey's, you know, sci-fi Batman story. And it's been great. It's been the best Batman solo book. Certainly I'm reading.
It's been awesome.
It doesn't say how many issues. I assume it's six, but, I really like, I mean, the only false note in it is that he reminds us here that he's like a year into being Batman and Doug Monkey's drawing him to be a giant beast.
On that myself. I was like, oh, this doesn't need to happen. This could be at any point. I think he should be further along to have sort of been in full command of his skills. Cause there's no, if he's only a year into it, there's no like, I'm not sure what I'm doing.
Right. You're right. It doesn't make sense.
No.
However, that aside,
it doesn't make sense four issues in. Like, if you'd said at the beginning, I probably would have not noticed it or forgotten about it. But at this point, I was like, come on. This is full-on Batman.
Right. His army against the slavers of the universe, particularly this one company, has been really compelling. And I like the little group he's got around him. He's got this, like, crazy alien wolf. He's got this funny robot. He's got this
Punchbot.
You know, somewhat love interest Tamarian character.
I love it.
Take her back to the Wayne Manor and see how happy she is. She's out of there. The first cocktail party she's going to go to. but like, just, you know, just really great Jason Aaron badass moments. Like the beginning when he's sort of zapped in by the Zeta Beam and the guide ordered an army. He says, "Where's my army?" He says, "I'm the army." And then he beats them all up. And then, I thought the introduction of the Thanagarian character was terrific, so much so I thought that was the final page.
Yeah, yeah.
I was like, oh, that's a cool final page, and then it kept going for another, like, 12 pages. He's just creating this awesome little sci-fi.
It's an
Elseworlds Batman story, basically, and it's really fun.
It's like 70s adventure romance, you know? Like, it's a fantasy story. You know, this could be a Conan story. You just change the setting to spaceships and stuff. It's great.
Right.
You've just taken the character and be like, we put him here. Like, he could have done this exact same story, you know, in medieval times or in, you know, like Samaria.
This is a Conan story where, like, you could totally make Batman Conan and make it set in the Hibernian Age, have him setting slaves free. He's in love with one of the slave girls is in love with him. Mm-hmm. She's also a badass. This is essentially what Jason Aaron was doing on Conan the Barbarian. Yeah. I didn't realize that until you just said it. But
I didn't either until I said it. But I was sort of like, what's the feeling I'm going? Because I was like, there's something 70s about this. And I was like, it's the sci-fi. And I was like, oh, no, it's like Savage Sword of Conan. It's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but
it's
but
really fun book.
None of it rings false. Like, I want this version of Batman. Like, Batman's great because you can, at no point did I think, oh, he wouldn't be able to do that. You never think that about Batman. It gives you such, sort of freedom to just like throw as much stuff as at you can because he's Batman. He's gonna figure it out. He's only human. He's not. It doesn't matter. He's kind of. Where did he come up? How did he make a space Batman suit? Doesn't matter. He did.
I kind of want him in Ione to find love.
Mm-hmm. Well,
just a little bit of happiness.
Sure, but you know, like, think about this isn't that dissimilar from Superman on War World or Battle World, whatever it was.
Not at all. It's very similar, actually.
Yeah, but this is, I mean, this is more fun. And I liked that. I'm not trying to take it down.
That was a really good one. This is incredibly fun.
Yeah.
Like, this is a great, This will be a great little trade to give to people.
I remembered like reading that first issue. I don't think we've never talked about this on the show because of whatever, how it hasn't lined up. But I read that first issue, I guess later, because I think it came out over the holiday. And I kind of went in like a little like, oh, I hope I like this. And I got to think, I was like, that was fantastic, you know, and it's gotten better every time. And it hasn't come out all that. I guess it's probably come out monthly, but these days that feels like forever. I was like, has this been late? But, you know, this is the fourth issue. It's April. That makes sense. But it feels like it's been 8 weeks.
Yeah. If I had to pick this week, I would have had several books to choose from. And this would have been in the conversation.
Great book.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot. Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit 1 million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/ifanboy.
I have feelings about Black Widow and Hawkeye number two.
Well, first, I read issue one.
Okay.
I think it came out when I was on one of my trips.
Mm-hmm. It was literal traveling. He wasn't on psychedelics.
I was on another trip. I definitely read it. And I definitely don't remember what happened in it. And so it took me a while to catch up to speed while I was reading this. I'm like, oh, right. Yeah. Like it was like, this is Stephanie Phillips, who I like a lot.
Yeah.
It's no knock on her.
No.
I just think the Black Widow being symbioted is the dumbest thing I've read in a long time and totally unnecessary for the character. And I'm annoyed.
I am trying desperately to give it the benefit of the doubt for all sorts of reasons. One is I'm a Stephanie Phillips fan. They keep giving her work. The big two, but it's on these weird corners. And so, and it's like, here, you can do Black Widow and Hawkeye. Great. Black Widow's Venom. Okay. You know, roll with it.
Right.
Basically, the story is that Hawkeye killed somebody, or they think Hawkeye killed somebody. And so somebody has to go do something about it. And then at the end of the last year, she's like, no, I did kill him. And so you're sort of seeing the reveal for that. There's good stuff in this. Clint is kind of Clint, you know, he's kind of a bumbling James Bond thing at the beginning, and there's a really nice theme in this about,
but he's bumbling on purpose.
Yeah, right. No, but it's like archers are underestimated, and so that's why, you know. And it was nice. I thought it was really good. There's good
scenes. I think it's funny.
Go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead. You're good.
There's good scenes, like, as a symbiote story. There's a couple of interesting things that happen here.
Yes.
It's like the suit gets jealous of Clint.
That. That was
like, that's good. I don't want it there, but it, you know, it's being used well. Like, it's not bad. I just don't like that part of it.
Right. There's a couple of funny things. One, you know, because of the movies, I was like, wait, were they romantically? Yes, they were. And I had to remember that the comic characters were romantically.
But the
yes,
movie
when
they
were Avengers together. Yeah. And in the comics, they were.
Right. Because Clint and Natasha, both of them.
Like, his primary exes are like Mockingbird and Black Widow. Mm-hmm. Those are like his two big ones.
Yeah.
I just find it continually hilarious that they've basically gone back to giving him a full on purple suit again, everything but the mask. Mm-hmm. Like, they just won't do the masks. He's got a full on purple suit now. Full. Every part of his body's covered with purple up to his neck. but they won't go back to the mask because of the movies. It's just find it hilarious. He's not even a character, you know, an active character anymore in the movies, but nope, no mask. I did like it. There's as a story, like
there's a hint the here though, elements, that he's,
the flashbacks are good.
That there's that first page where they head in the flashbacks. Amazing. Coney Island. That's the first issue.
Yep.
Like I have it up there on my wall. I almost cracked it. I was like, I'll sort of look at it, but there is also a hint that he's about to get venomed. And I was like, motherfucker, I don't want that.
Yeah. I don't know what happened. I don't know why this happened. What I do love is Batman, Superman, World's Finest 26, which I feel like Dan Mora had a blast drawing.
It was certainly.
He gets to do a bunch of stuff that super artists don't normally get to do with like big cartoony character work and sort of comedic stuff. And he really nails it.
Yeah, this was super fun. It has, I mean, like this has been a hell of a run. You know what's funny about this book is that I tend to leave it for a time that I can like really, like, you know, sometimes I'll be rushing through things and there's the other ones like, that's going to take a little more thought. So I have to make sure I leave it for there. And I always think it's a bigger, more complicated book than it is. And that's because I think it's so, the pages are so full. It's not hard to read. It doesn't take a long time. It's not, but I know this, I was like, there's going to be a lot to this. I always think it's going to be meatier than it is, but it's fun. And neither of those are bad things. It's a romp, but it's so jammed full of ideas and stuff. The character designs through this thing are just crazy.
I mean, the first page is the full on splash page, which you never get anymore, of Batman, Superman, Robin, Batmite, and Mixie Pitalik, doing the dramatic walk away from an explosion. They're all wearing coats. They're all wearing sunglasses. The coats are all billowing. And I laughed my head off.
Dusters.
And then they're like, what the fuck? Like, I just wanted us to look cool. And I thought that was funny. And then making Robin into a Superman character and giving him a costume that's a mix of his Earth 2 costume from the Bronze Age and some other crazy stuff was fun.
I thought that was great. Like, he's like, do you want superpowers? And he's like, no. And me. Like he wanted them immediately. And of course, he turns around and is like, I do not want this. Actually, that was a really good device, too, where like he uses his supervision and all of a sudden he gets a crushing migraine. You know,
because he hasn't trained it. Like, I thought it was really smart. And then, you know, all the Mite characters are really fun. Yeah. And, you know, it's a comic, so things happen for dramatic purposes. It's a story. It happens in every medium. But, like, they split up into teams as these things go. Batman and Mixie Spitalik and Superman and Batmite. Superman and Batmite go to fight the magician and Abracadabra. And I was like, wait. You sent the guy who's vulnerable to magic to fight the musician? Mm-hmm. Not the musician, the magician?
Yeah,
But that was, it led to a fun thing with the suit. And it just was a really fun book.
Absolutely.
That's my big takeaway. Like, this is a really fun comic, but this issue in particular, because both Mark Waid and Dan Mora got to go really over the top in a way that makes sense for the story. And that was really fun.
I got to say, I think at the end of the day, if we're looking at the Eisners next year and Dan Mora and Daniel Acuna are not, and Daniel Warren Johnson, I'll give you that too, are not, you know, considered. It's going to be a travesty because, I mean, the works in these two books are just stupid.
Yeah. Yeah. Back to Tom King, Helen of Windhorn, number two. I actually went back and read number one.
You hadn't?
Because I know I did, but that might, I don't know what's going on. But the last couple of weeks, I've been having trouble remembering. I've been really tired. Having trouble remembering. Those two weeks I took off were not restful. So I was like, I remember liking it. I don't remember what happened in it exactly. So I went back and read them back. And I read them back to back. Enjoyed two as well.
I think it's a great book. And again, this is a Tom King book. I couldn't have told you that. I know. I mean,
not a 9-panel grid to be found.
No, I mean, and he did the Supergirl story. Like, I can tell this is the same team who did the Supergirl story, but not really. You know, there's the mystery element of this is gigantic. And I'm like, oh, please tell me more. And I don't, and it's going so slow. Like, they're sitting down to dinner with the patriarch character. And you're like, all right, here we're going to get somewhere. And all he does is grumble and eat. And it's just like, we are feeling what the character, what Helen feels, you know, like we, and then just the, because we are seeing it through the eyes of the governess, you see that Helen is both a child and an adult at the same time. and she's going back and forth. And so when she reverts to being a drunk person, like it's hard to watch. And when she goes the other way, you're like, oh, cause she's going to be herself here. And then she becomes vulnerable and she's like, can I sleep here with you? And that's very realistic. That's very like young adult, older, you know, adolescent. It's kind of crushing in that way. And then just the Bill Kosevely, the art direction, you know, like if this was a movie, I'd be like, these sets and costumes are fantastic.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful book.
It feels very much like a YA novel and like a kind of thing that maybe would get sold to Netflix, you know, like it's has that kind of tone, which I like a lot. You know, the story is, the daughter of basically a guy who wrote Conan or
Robert E. Howard,
John Carter of Mars-esque stories. You know, he's died. She's living in the giant house, the grandfather's house, and there's real monsters outside and nothing makes sense. And there's also a framing device in the present day. This guy who wrote a book about it and interviewed the governess, where all the narration is her interviews from the book. So it's all.
And he's married to a early 70s Robert Redford, which is nice.
Good for him.
I don't know.
Like I took off a shirt and I was like, good for you.
100%. That guy's making the mustache work. Nobody's made a mustache work like Robert Redford ever.
No. I really like this book.
Yeah. This is great.
Nightwing 300 or 113.
There's only one reason to talk about this book, so get to it.
Well, we're going to get to that in 1 second, but I do want to mention that, again, this made me feel something. Not surprising, but there's a whole thing where Nightwing and Tim and Damian are investigating and with Barbara's help as Oracle investigating this arms shipment that they tried to get into Bloodhaven, but his ex and her fucking stupid pirates blocked it, which I hate that part. So they had to go through Gotham.
I like how stupid it is.
It is stupid in a way that's very Bronze Age-y. I just wish they had left that all alone. It doesn't matter. So they're trying to figure out who's trying to bring in a shit ton of guns into Bloodhaven enough to form an army. Turns out it's the Heart Stealer guy. That's the main story. So, you know, the background is it's a big day. Everyone keeps saying it's Dick's big day. Turns out it's his birthday, but he's also getting honored with the key to the city for helping, you know, fund shelters and all these things with the inheritance from Alfred. So then
hold on.
I'm sighing because Alfred's dead.
I get it, but I do want to say that like the reveal here is that Barbara also gets, and I was like, why? What did she have to do with any of that other than his Oracle?
Well, she helped him like figure out what to do with it.
Mm. I felt like it was.
She's also way underdressed for the ceremony.
I had noticed that. Well, she didn't think she was going to be out there.
It doesn't matter. She's at the ceremony.
I thought she was just being avant-garde.
You got to go black tie. It's black tie.
Yeah.
So, you know, they get honored, and then they decide to celebrate by everyone go down to Marvin George's Pizza, which is the pizza place they've been showing throughout this run, which is run by Marv Wolfman and George Perez, the creators of Nightwing.
George is dead.
And we've had a lot of discussion, although not in a while, about pizza. Put a pin in the pizza. We get to the – he goes inside, and this whole sequence is drawn by Bruno Redondo. The whole rest of the book was by Daniel De Nicolio, which I – that was okay.
My note is that I actually really liked the art and I thought it was great, but this is the wrong book for it. All the Robins looked exactly the same.
This is the wrong issue too. The big 300 issue should have.
Yes. It really was too much of a change. I like Bruno Redondo doing a handful of pages I thought was poorly planned. Basically.
At least bring back some classics. Bring back Scott McDaniel. Bring back other people who are known for drawing the book. Like I was really surprised. Anyway, he goes into the store to thank Marv for baking 150 pizzas or 56 pizzas. And they have while they're talking, you see behind him a framed photo of George, because apparently he has passed just as his real life avatar has. And also Marv Wolfman helped write this scene, by the way.
Did you notice the pages though? Like it doesn't make sense. Actually, you know what? No, the pages in the credits do not correspond to the pages in the digital reader, which is why I was having trouble with it. I just figured that out.
So the last panel in that scene is, you know, Marv's giving him a pep talk saying, you know, you did a good job. It wasn't just, you didn't just spend money, you did good with it, et cetera, et cetera. He puts his arm on Dick's shoulder, says, I'm so proud of everything you've done, Dick. And George was too. And that line got me.
Oh.
When he said, and George was too, I literally start choking up because, you know, the weight of George Perez's death sort of hit me that moment, mm-hmm. and this scene, and Marv saying it, Marv having written the dialogue, and I know Dick is not a real person, but it just got me moment.
Can I tell you something? That first of all, that completely passed me by, Marv and George's. Totally. Like, I think we mentioned it before. You're saying it now, and I was like, oh, I get it. Also, that's not what I think of Marv Wolfman as looking like. He looks different in my mind, because in real life, 20 years ago, he looked different than this. I don't know what he looks like.
Yes. He does look a little bit like this now.
I didn't see George Perez on the wall. And then when you just said that, I got a little emotional. Like, I felt it.
It got me.
100%.
Like, it got me. You know, we follow these people professionally through their whole lives, right? Mm-hmm. Reading these stories. And then they pass on, and the characters that created still there. And then you're in this weird moment where the characters are on the page, and they're speaking as if they're like, it's all mm-hmm. wrapped up in the whole craziness of being a comic fan and a comic creator and all this stuff. And it just got me in that moment. Let's talk about the pizza.
Okay, so
I thought it was mostly on point.
Okay, well, hold on.
There's a couple that aren't, but
we
mostly
cut
on point.
To the big shot outside Marvin George's, and I have not really been into Danielle DiNicolo. But then I go, well, Danielle, presumably is she, has seen pizza before. You will notice all the pizza is doing what it should. There's a flop to it. The edge of the pizza is dipping down.
The pizza physics is good.
The pizza physics is good. Somebody's taking a bite. This woman at a table, she's holding it correctly. Her mouth is open. There's a lot of holding the pizza over the plate.
That's the only, not her, the one, whoever's next to her.
Oh, yeah.
That's the only one that's a little iffy.
He's holding it like a
pizza
book.
Is floating and floating in midair, but the rest of them, I was pretty impressed.
Comparatively. So then you go to the Bruno Redondo pages. Bruno Redondo, one of the most exciting up-and-coming artists I've seen before. The pizza that the kid is eating outside with
it's
the dot
pizza.
Pitch. Yeah, that's not the same pizza. What is that?
It's a frozen pizza.
Is that a tomato?
It's a frozen pizza because it's got no weight. It's got, like, anyone knows, you grew up, if you lived in New York City or visited it, mm-hmm. You got to really support that pizza because it doesn't have the structural integrity
to stand on
its own like that.
The pizza's not going to do that without the fold. And it's not the same pizza it's not the fresh, drippy, lovely pizza.
Fresh out of the oven pizza.
That's not what's happening.
Where it's
out
too
there.
Hot for your mouth, but you go for it anyway.
Oh, man, I have burned the roof of my mouth a lot of times.
But I was impressed by the Italian artist's grasp of pizza physics. I shouldn't have been. I like how even in the way back, like the figures become sort of impressionist, but the pizza slices are still
floating.
Still floating.
It's nice. It respects pizza everywhere.
There's only one. I mean, other than the floating pizza by the guy at the table, the Dick Grayson himself in the middle of the panel, he's talking to Barbara. He's going to drop that entire slice.
The cheese is going to slide off.
That cheese is sliding right off, and that dog is going to be on it.
The dog is staring at it. That is actually the
bite
the
wing
most.
Is ready to pounce mm-hmm. on that mm-hmm. cheese because that's coming right down.
I like the guy on the right who's double fisting, and he's eating that.
Oh
piece.
Yeah, he knows what's up.
Yeah, but he's gonna get grease is gonna run down his arm and chin.
But at a party like this, you don't know if you're gonna get a second. So you better grab two while you're there.
That must still be a thing. Like when the pizza arrives, like at college, and you've got to try to get two slices in your hands before A, somebody eats the rest of it, and B, somebody makes you pay for it.
So he made 56 pizzas, right? So it was eight slices of pie. That's
go ahead, do that math.
448 slices.
My God,
you should be able to get two.
And it's just the one guy. Well, he's got a crew, but he doesn't have George.
I was very happy that I saw that page and I was like, oh, mama.
Immediately, I locked in. That's probably why I missed the whole part about Marv and George, because I was literally just like, all right, we need this for the show. No, I was writing material. I didn't write anything.
And so then the weird thing was there's a backup story by Michael W. Conrad and Howard Porter. Both super fine creators. We love Howard Porter, a special place in our hearts as a JLA artist. Michael W. Conrad does really terrific stuff. But why are these guys doing Nightwing 300? Why isn't it Scott McDaniel? And I realize Chuck Dixon is persona non grata, but listen, I'd been fine if he came back for this because he's incredibly important to Nightwing, and you can't discount that.
He's a hell of a writer. And also, so, like, I do want to say, like, as I watched this, like, I was like, who's drawing this? And it's Howard Porter. And I was like, awesome. Like, yeah, he good. Drew the shit out of this.
His new style, ever since he broke his hand or hurt his hand, is, you know, different than his old style, but it's a very dynamic. It's, I mean, it's so very exaggerated.
It's liquid.
It's not everybody's cup of tea, but I like it a lot.
It's like there's a lot of Paul Pope in there now, and just like it's so.
Yeah.
There's that one shot of the train. It's not really coming around a corner, but it's like we're looking at it with a super wide angle lens.
Right.
At 416. By the way, I read that. So there's a timer in the top corner of this. And what it is doing is it's counting down. So each page, you see how much time has passed because it's a bomb timer, right?
Right.
My first time through, I was maybe four pages in. I thought it was the time. I was like, okay, we're going backwards. You're doing that. And I was like, this doesn't make any sense. And I got to the bomb page and went, oh, so I went back because there's no dialogue. And I read it correctly. But that's my fault. That's not their fault.
It was just bizarre, other than Tom Taylor, Bruno Redondo, and Marv Wolfman, you know, everyone else is like, okay, they're good creators, but nothing to do with Nightwing's history, really. It's just weird.
Michael W. Conrad wrote The Son of the Demon, right?
No.
No?
No.
Why do I
know?
Who wrote that?
No. Son of the Demon? That was Mike W. Barr.
Oh, well, you can see why I would have thought that. It's a W.
I mean, I'm sure Mike W. Conrad is super psyched to be confused for Mike W. Barr.
Sure.
But apparently, that was a long time ago.
Apparently.
So those are the books we had time to talk about. Normally I say that we wanted to talk about, but I could have talked about Superman. I could have talked about other books. It was a big, good week of comics. But let's talk about the patron pick. Every patron at patreon.com/ifanbook gets a vote to add a book to the rundown. This week, it was at first a blowout and became a squeaker. The winner was Blow Away, number one, from Boom Studios, written by Zach Thompson with art by Nicola Izzo, Francesco Segala on colors, and DC Hopkins on letters. And do we have a Boom book last week, too? Or was it the week before?
Possibly.
Possibly.
I don't want this to be a spoiler for the whole thing, but I read this early on. Mm-hmm. And so when I was putting the script together and I saw the thing, I was like, boy, I don't remember a single thing about it. And I had to like open it up and look through it again. And then just now I was like, I don't remember. I couldn't have told you what it is. In fact, like I kind of remember, I was like, oh, it's in Antarctica. And then I was like, I have no idea what the story was. Like I completely forgot it.
It's in Canada.
Oh yeah.
It's in Baffin Island, Canada. So there's a woman who is a photographer and she's hired by this. Is it a magazine or something
she's never be basically able to afford to hire? She's one of those people like from the BBC documentaries and they train a camera on trying to capture something in nature that no one ever, they'll have this amazing footage of these rare birds hatching. So that's the deal. Right. She's in this cold hell wasteland and she's trying to get footage of these rare birds.
Right. Hatching. She just has this camera on this mountain waiting for whatever animal it was. I don't remember what it was.
It was a bird.
To show up.
It was birds, baby birds being hatched.
Is that what it was?
I think so.
All right, it doesn't matter. Because in waiting for it, she sees
hatchlings.
Some people.
Filming hatchlings.
First there's an argument and they're climbing the mountain and then there's a whole fight and so she may have witnessed a crime. Meanwhile, she encounters a polar bear and does not get torn to shreds.
Talks him down.
The most unbelievable part of the story. Yeah, I'm sure that happens all the time with polar bears. They're totally reasonable. Mm-hmm. I didn't dislike this. I liked it,
same.
But it was very much a cold open. And I don't really know what the story is. I don't know what the stakes are. Stakes. I didn't dislike it. I did like it. Especially Nicola Izzo, I thought was really good.
The concept is good. The setup is good. Like the idea of like, okay, so what if you have one of these nature photographers? What if while they're out there, they see some shit that they're not supposed to.
Right.
I think that
good idea. Good concept.
I think the structure had some problems and the dissemination of information had some problems. I think it could have been smoother because there's a bit where she's watching and then she sees a hunter. She's like, oh, there's that hunter. What's he doing? And then that seems to be over. And then later she sees the two people and those things don't seem related. And maybe they should be, and maybe we don't know, but I thought it was jarring in a way. I mean, we really have to know what happens later, but I feel like it's like, have one thing happen. or if you're going to have two, like, I feel like you have to have three. I don't know. You have to have several things.
Yeah.
Because two is weird. I feel
like the rule of threes needed to come into play.
Yeah.
It also felt like if you're going to show, like, the mundanity of this and how she keeps seeing things, like, take away the pages of the polar bear and stuff and just show her, yeah, like,
you need to do it
going through this routine of seeing things over and over until something happens.
Yeah.
That jars you out of the repetition.
Yeah, and I think that visually, in a comic book, there's lots of ways to do that easily. And
yeah, one page could
come.
Yeah,
I mean, there are a couple, like, you just do that. And they do it, but not enough in the beginning. You're right, to set that sort of, that mundanity. Is that the right way to say it? It's not mundaneness. That sounds good.
It seems
fun,
though.
You know, I think you're right. I think that needs to be set, like, because later they do it. When she's watching the mountain, you see that same still frame that you get through the camera. And I think that works really well. And when you see the men climbing and having the argument, it's too many pages before you get to that. The whole, like, almost that whole story could have been told like that. That would have been really cool. The page, yeah, where they fight.
Yeah,
and
then at the end, and in the end, there's a whole thing where she goes out to investigate because they've fallen, and then we see her through the lens of a sniper rifle, and someone's got a rifle. Like, there's a lot here. There's a lot of possibility, but I didn't finish it going, wow, what's going to happen next? I finished it going, interesting.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's like, okay, you're not quite good enough yet. And not even like, but it's just, you know, raw.
Bad.
Not at all. Like a promising rookie. You know, trying to figure out the baby steps. That said, like I said, I really didn't remember what happened at all until I went back through it. I also am having a trouble with the title Blow Away. I really feel like it should be blown. And it's almost like a command. What should I do now? Blow away. You know, like, it's
right.
I don't know. Like, the words feel weird to me. I think I maybe, like, it could, yeah, like, the script and the layouts could have used another pass. I think
so.
Punch
Jack up. Thompson is Canadian writer who's wrote Kazar for Marvel, the Marvel's X-Men, the Dregs, some other books, some TV stuff. I think also Batman: Brave and the Bold for DC. I just think, oh, and Skinwalker, we read that for Boom.
What was it?
Cemetery Kids Don't Die.
Yeah.
Anyway, I just thought that the information here wasn't conveyed as interestingly as it could have, but I'm not hating on the book. I thought it was interesting. I will probably check out the second issue. This is spoilers for sticking with it, but I'm probably going to check it out depending on the week and if I can remember to
do
so. It
was imperfect, but had qualities and some promise.
Yes. I think a lot's going to ride in the second issue and what's revealed in it. Because I'm waiting to know what any of it means.
And I'll tell you right now,
care.
If it's some supernatural shit, I'm out. I mean it. If there's a vampire or the spirit of ice, I'm out.
This woman, this photographer, Josh, she's an ice totem. Her family have all been ice totems going back centuries.
I want her to look.
They've all been drawn to this place to become ice defenders.
I want her to look less pretty. Not that she needs to be an unattractive.
Sometimes photographers are pretty.
No. She's living in the Arctic by herself.
It's Canada.
She's living in the Arctic by herself. She should look pretty, like no. But if you're
Canada has moisturizer,
if you're trying to show that mundanity, she's by herself. She has no, like.
She's probably got a lot of sleep.
I want her to look a little bit like she's been working so hard on this, and this is all that she's doing. Again, you want to contribute to that solitude, that mundaneness. She almost like listen, picking up on, like, hey, there's some people climbing, like, that should be a bigger deal.
Yeah, this is show business, not
I'm
show
editing
reality.
The shit out of this, and it's not like here's what I would have done, but if I was an editor, if I was a person making notes on the script,
yeah, it's the worst kind of review. Yeah.
Well,
I know, we both have done it. I'm not saying it's just you.
But that is also in the exploration of trying to figure out what didn't work, because that's what we're trying to get to.
Blow Away, number one, Boom Studios, ratings out of five. Ratings.
2.95.
Three.
Ooh, 2.95. Close. I can't.
Close.
I can't do 2.5. I can't do 3.
I get it. No, it's not a 2.5 book. We've had 2.5 books. This was not a 2.5 book.
Yeah.
So there you go. Patreon.com/iFanboy. Every patron who votes to add a book to the rundown gets to... Yeah, that's those are words that make sense somehow. Every patron gets to vote to add a book to the rundown, but if you give it the $5 or higher level, you get a superpower live in the show. We are so over time, and there will not be emails in the show.
You'll hear those next week.
Do the patron power, Josh.
All right, Jeff Shea has the ability at any point to disguise himself by transforming into any sort of processed food packaging that he can decide on or wants to do. So
wait, go ahead. Hold on. Just the packaging?
Well, it looks as if it's the real thing. In fact, like that, it's not, he can't, okay, like he can't be.
So he can turn himself into like a honey baked ham.
Yes, but it wouldn't be the food itself. It has to be
wrapped in plastic.
It has to be in the package. Now, if you were to pick up that package and...
Right, sure.
Listen, though, here's the thing. If you were to pick up that package...
Don't eat him.
Well, please. You can pick up the package. You can unwrap it. All the stuff in there would be what was in the real package. If it's Rice-A-Roni, the rice and the seasoning package is going to fall out. However, he must not be eaten because that will be the end of him. Oh. So you can use this to hide.
Does he taste delicious?
He's gonna be food. He's gonna be what the food is. So if he's disguising himself, it has to be in such a way that he's pretty sure he's not gonna get eaten, because then he's either gonna die or he's gonna have to reveal himself and move back in. If he gets eaten at all, that's it. So that's a key that has to do with what he's choosing. Like if like it's a he's trying to hide in the college dorm room at 1 a.m. and everybody comes home, you better not turn yourself into Hostess cupcakes. Like
or anything
pretty
really.
Much, but you know, like something really like you know, like he doesn't want to be that. He's going to want to be like
right. Pizza.
Like I don't know, like boil quinoa. Like he doesn't want
Listen, I
farro.
So it's not processed. It's not just the meat thing. It's any food.
Yeah. Any processed food, you know, packaged snacks.
And
pretty much everything in the supermarket that, you know, that isn't in the deli aisle.
Is he still conscious when he is a Twinkie?
And full sensory, like he can see and hear what's going on. Excellent surveillance unless someone decides to eat him.
Does he smell how delicious he smells?
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, trouble. What happens if he takes just a little nibble out of himself? Does he have a mouth?
No, he's taco shells.
So he's not like the hamburger in
Better Off Dead.
He's not the Van Halen hamburger.
He's not claymation.
Okay. Thanks for being a patron, Jeff. Enjoy that power, by the way. Good job, Josh. Patreon.com/iFanboy. Real quick.
I'm pretty sure we haven't done that.
Patreon.com/iFanboy is a primary way people support the show. We thank you if you do. If you think we're worth supporting, we appreciate that. You can become a member. You can pay monthly or you can pay for a yearly membership and get 10% off. You get exclusive merchandise. You get patron power at the proper level. You get to do the monthly hangout with us. You get the Discord community. You get Facebook. All that stuff's happening over at patreon.com/iFanboy. iFanboy.threadless.com is our t-shirt store. iFanboy.com/support is our PayPal tip jar. Again, if you're one of those, you know, several billionaires who won the lotto this year, this past week, or near billionaires after taxes, consider there. iFanboy.com/Amazon is our general link for shopping, and you can find our Booksplode books there once we fix the code. And we thank everyone who does that. Also, bookshop.org is our partner for local bookstores. You'll find those links on our Booksplode show links or pages or whatever they're called. And thank you for your support. Again, you could cut your own throat and say yes or answer email, but I think we should skip them.
I'm not doing. No, I can't. It's gonna be touch and go to get this.
I'm just gonna
done.
Say. I think this is the first time all year we've skipped an email, and I think that's okay. Sometimes we have to do what's best for us.
Yeah, these questions will still be here.
contact@iFanboy.com is how you can write in. Sorry for the two emails that we had in the script, but we just ran out of time because we babbled on about books for too long. But you can write in for this show or for MediaSplode. If it's for MediaSplode, put in the subject line MediaSplode so we know. It's for that. Let's just jump to plugs then.
All right, there we go. Just this past week, you will have heard or gotten in your feed the newest MediaSplode episode, our non-comics monthly show. We talk about Dune Part 2, and we complete the first ever playing of our What to Watch Next challenge. In the last MediaSplode, the other two voted on what the third must watch from their to watch list, and we each watched a couple episodes and then talked about it. Yeah, yeah, it was good stuff.
I enjoyed it.
There
the real thing is we have to do it from a show not on the to watch list, so we could make watch Josh or Ron watch either Friday Night Lights or Fargo.
Friday Night Lights. Yeah,
well, I think Fargo.
He'll like Fargo. There's no chance he won't. He'll like Friday Night Lights, but he won't admit it, so it doesn't matter. That's a different thing. We should figure out some way. He's not going to hear this, so.
No, he doesn't listen.
Okay. So in the next couple of weeks, you will probably hear, we don't know the order, and we can't promise anything, but there's an Animation Brain Trust show coming out on the Crisis on Infinite Earths Part 2.
It might be, and there will be. It might be this coming week. One of these shows will come out this coming week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's a Talkspillage coming up too. It's just a little scheduling.
Hasn't been recorded yet, but it's in the process of pre-production.
It'll happen. We're good.
Those shows will hit this week, and then the other one will hit sometime after. And then next month, just give everyone a heads up so they have time to read our May Booksplode. If you want to read along with us, it's going to be a seminal story that neither one of us has ever read. It's Avengers Kree Skrull War. Skrull, not Skull. Skrull.
Kree Skull.
Skrull.
Skrull.
My neighbor brought over ribs that he cooked while we've been recording, and I've been getting text messages saying there are ribs downstairs, and I can't concentrate. Uh-huh. Skrull.
And she's not going to eat any, so they're just sitting there getting cold.
So I got to hurry and say, you can find our library of over 1,300 shows and counting over at ifanboy.com, and wherever podcasts are sold. You can follow us at ifanboycomics on Instagram to find out what the pick of the week is before the show comes out. Sometimes the best of the week in panels. And other stuff sometimes. I don't know. We occasionally
post. Sometimes there is other stuff. That's important to note.
We're fun. For sure. Give us a follow. And also individually, C.S. Kilpatrick on Instagram and J.A. Flanagan on Instagram. Are we the most exciting Instagram posters who've ever lived? No. Are we the worst? Absolutely not.
Well, yeah. And you'll never hear me talking like they talk. Like with that sort of weird cadence.
I want you to start doing lives. I want you to start doing live videos.
I got to say, like, I have a very healthy ego, and I think I have things to say, and I think people enjoy it. But I would feel so stupid walking around with a camera pointed at myself talking to
people. Please record your morning walks and just whatever's on in the news, you know.
Like, and just like I could sit in my truck and just tell you what I think about some shit I'm not qualified to talk about. Or the worst, I read a fucking Wikipedia article and I'm just telling you what's in it.
Right.
Did you know that actor
yes.
Ian McKellen didn't know that he was like, it's...
This is the future of entertainment, Josh. Don't knock it.
Well, until they realize that nobody made anything for them to steal from.
Yeah, it's a problem, isn't it?
Yes, it
Wrap
is.
Wrap it up. I'd like some ribs.
Okay. Subscribe to youtube.com/ifanboy, which I was just kind of making fun of a little bit. We're really more social media in that way.
Hoisted by your own petard.
Yeah, that's fine. My petard is quite stretched at this point. Where you'll find all of our old video shows, and we'll post this audio show every week if you want to listen to it like that. You know, likes on that are fine. If you know, you can subscribe to it. We're not starting a new video show anytime soon, so I wouldn't be like, well, I don't want to miss one.
Unless it's
like
Josh's Daily Walks. Josh talks.
You know what? I bet there would be about...
I think
20 to 50 people who would enjoy that.
I think that show we joked about when we did that open water conversation about you going around your town, knocking on doors and asking if they've heard the good word about Jack Kirby is a show waiting to happen.
If you like this show, you can do a star rating or leave a comment or do whatever on whatever it is you listen to the show on. That always helps. And we thank you for doing those things. Let's bring it home, Daddy.
Did you do all the bot? Thanks. Oh, you did that part. Okay, thank you for listening.
Yeah.
This was incredibly fun for me.
Yeah, it was good.
I hope you at home enjoyed it. I hope you, Josh, enjoyed it as well, obviously.
I got into that mode.
I hope the listener enjoyed it, because that's why we're here, to make a little bit of fun for you for an hour a week talking about comics, and we hope you appreciate it. I had a good time. My name is Connor.
I'm Josh. Thanks, everyone.
Bye.